At the next light, Danny makes a left, but the two cars between us aren't turning, so I have to hustle a bit to catch up with him. Some punks jump into the street, teenagers on their way to sit outside at Tim Hortons for the night. They're all in black, of course, so I nearly hit one.
That's the voice of Nathan Sellin, the author of a new collection of stories called Indigenous Beasts from Raincoast Books. Hi, I'm Robert Ouimet, and welcome to the Raincoast Books podcast, episode 3. And who is this guy? Well, Nathan was born in Toronto, raised in Montreal, studied at Princeton, and taught school in Thailand, among other things, and he currently lives in Vancouver. The stories in this book give you a glimpse at a wide variety of characters, some of them just a bit off. Actually, some of them are quite a bit off. So before my interview with Nathan, let's hear more from those characters. Here he is reading from the story, Here Be Monsters, from his new book, Indigenous Beasts.
I'm trying to switch radio stations and drive and smoke all at the same time, and the reality that this is impossible finally dawns when I drop a lit cigarette in my lap. I should grab it before it burns the seat or my crotch, but instead I keep one hand on the wheel and the other on the radio dial, because I'm desperate to find just one decent song. This truck doesn't have a CD player, or even a tape deck, and that's really bothering me, because I feel like for some reason it would make a big difference if I could spend tonight listening to something I've heard before. Finally, I find a station playing the Chili Peppers, and even though they don't have anything new out, I decide that's good enough and grab the cigarette from between my legs and look up, and Danny's car is still right there, two in front of mine, slowing down for a yellow light. I've been surprised by how cautiously he drives ever since he left his apartment, never straying into the left lane on the highway, indicating every time he makes a turn, keeping a very consistent 15 feet between the car in front of him and his own. At the next light, Danny makes a left, but the two cars between us aren't turning, so I have to hustle a bit to catch up with him. Some punks jump into the street, teenagers on their way to sit outside at Tim Hortons for the night. They're all in black, of course, so I nearly hit one, and when I slam on the brakes and then slowly pull around him, the kid pounds on the trunk with his fist. On any other night, I'd pull over, just to send him running, but I don't want to lose track of Danny. We've never met, but Danny is very important to me. Finally, after several more turns, he slows down and parks in a row of sedans by the side of the road. The door of the Infiniti opens as I pull by, but I avoid looking at him and decide to go around the block once. I have time. He'll come back to his car when he's finished whatever he's doing inside, and I'll be waiting for him. When I was 11, I hit a walk-off home run to give the Surrey Storm a comeback victory in the Vancouver Little League Championships. The bat I used, a wooden Louisville Slugger, a present from my grandfather, is sitting, wrapped in blankets, between the two front seats of my car. Tonight I will use it to shatter every bone in Danny Marconi's body. I will beat him until his flesh turns to paste, until every bone in his body cracks like a double toward center field, until I am so covered in his blood that it mixes with my own. I will beat him until I no longer have the strength to raise the bat above my head, and then it will be over.
Nathan Sellin, reading from his collection of stories, Indigenous Beasts, out now from Raincoast Books. I got to meet and talk with Nathan at the Raincoast offices here in Vancouver, and I started out by asking him if some of his characters occasionally frightened him, even just a little.
No, I mean, there's certainly some of them I really like. There's the guy in Maubel who goes to the strip club, and he's just... He's not even a degenerate. I mean, he thinks he's hot shit. But I really enjoyed being him for that story. But I mean, you know, even the murderer there in Indigenous Beasts, or in Here Be Monsters, because he goes on to kill that guy. I never revulsed by him or scared by him. You know, I have a certain... I like all of them. I guess that's, you know, you can't write about them otherwise if they freak you out. Yeah.
And are these people that that you've run across in your travels, or are these people that you grew up with? There's such a range of types of characters. I'm trying to imagine how you could have met them all.
I don't know any murderers, sadly, and I got one or two of those, and some pretty bad bullies, and I was fortunate that I was never bullied. I never had my face urinated on, which, fingers crossed, that won't happen in the future. But certainly, everywhere you go, I'm always kind of conscious of the different kind of people I'm meeting in those scenarios, and all the stories are set in Canada, but certainly, Canadians travel far and wide, and it's interesting. You see a Canadian abroad, you see a Canadian at home, and they're all
Canadian at their core. And there's certain things about the identity which you can pick out. And I think that comes through in all the characters.
Reading each of the stories, I often sense that these were characters that had a secret lurking somewhere in their past or even in their very present. When you meet people, when you're talking to them, are you hearing things that most people aren't?
No, I mean, I don't think I have any kind of special gift of conversation that allows me to unlock somebody's secret, as you say. I knew a guy in college who used to always call people by their first name in conversation. It always struck me how often he said someone's first name, and I think that for some reason gave him a familiarity, and people always kind of opened up to him, but I don't have the similar gift. But I do think that's very true, that all my characters kind of have a secret, and that's something I always am very conscious of about people, that everyone has their own little secrets. It's something about maturity, perhaps. I noticed, you know, I have a lot of younger brothers and sisters, and as they grew up at a certain age, everyone kind of realizes they can start hiding things from other people, and it's always interesting to see what they choose to keep tucked away to themselves.
And in some cases, those secrets are, it's not so much that they're horrible, but they are unpleasant. You wouldn't put them on a resume, yet you treat them with very matter-of-factly, but also with a certain degree of respect. Like, that's normal that these people are like this.
Well, I guess, that is one thing that's consistent about all my characters. And I think about, most people, is that people keep things hidden for a reason because they know that if they were to wear them on their sleeve, then people would expect them, to some extent, to be ashamed. People know what they're keeping hidden and why they're doing it. But at the same time, everybody's got something tucked under the bed or written in a diary or, shoved between the sheets, right?
And do you think the characters are ashamed, though? Like, it seems to me they seem to...
No, I guess that's, the access point for the reader is that, they may be ashamed to some extent, but it's something they're willing to share with the reader, which, allows you in. I guess this kind of relates to the title, Indigenous Beasts, where we get to those kind of primal instincts where you really see the heart of the characters. So I guess for me, driving towards those moments in the stories is a way of kind of accessing that more fundamental nature within the characters.
Yeah, it's like they reach a point in their life or their experience or that moment where they're challenged and their base instinct kind of comes
forward. Right, exactly, yeah. And, some of them revel in it and others kind of skunk away from it. But, it certainly reveals something about them when they are, faced with that challenge, as you say.
Nathan Sellin talking about his new collection of stories called Indigenous Beasts. And I'll have information for you on how you can buy the book. But first, one more reading, this story called Home Movies. Here is Nathan Sellin.
Julius Sauvage was born in Montreal, a beautiful son to two ordinary parents. His father worked in the garment district, stitching ready-to-wear dresses for Westmount beauty queens. His mother sold newspapers on the street corner outside their apartment. Julius shared a bed with his parents until the day he moved away, his 18th birthday. After that, he never saw them again, but they thought about him every day. Julius went west, over the mountains and into the sunshine. The year was 1960. He rode rail cars all the way and watched Canada slip by in a blur of frontiers and the men chasing them. When he hit the ocean, he turned south, towards the sun and the golden promise of California. Julius acted in Los Angeles, mostly because he could. His face was all smooth ebony angles, and there will always be work for the beautiful wanderers. He played a cowboy, the first black hero of the silver screen. He would sign autographs with a J so exaggerated you could cut yourself on its curve. He thought himself in Eden. Julius married a petite woman named Frances, mesmerized by the many faces of her eccentricity. She wrote only with crayons. He fell in love with her the way you fall in love with a child, all at once and for no reason. She killed herself a year later, jumping in a sundress the color of ketchup from a balcony at the Chateau Marmont. Julius himself died 30 years later, when old age arrived to reinforce his broken heart. He went quietly, on a rainy Sunday morning, curled up in a blue velvet armchair by a window facing the street. He had faded, like the ink on a Golden Age comic, his adventures forgotten in gathering dust. Julius and Frances had one son, Harold. Julius gave him all the finest things and read him bedtime tales about Greek gods and true love. Sometimes, when the boy would creep into his father's room late at night, he would catch Julius crying. For the rest of his life, he would carry this as evidence of how wonderful a woman his mother had been. When he was 18, Harold left Julius to go to school, then dropped out and became a carpenter. Julius stopped talking to him after that, telling Harold carpenters could only ever lead lives that left them wishing. But Harold knew his father was wrong, because Jesus never wanted, and who could ask for more than that? Harold married Bernadette in the fall of that year. He kept a leaf from that day in his wallet, and even when it dried, it did not crumble or break. Bernadette still had all her baby teeth, and made everyone she met feel like they could stay up all night with her, just talking with the lights off and holding hands beneath the blankets. Harold took to collecting stamps, pasting them slowly into the pages of his favorite book, making sure they lined up as squarely as fascists on parade. Bernadette warned him that soon he wouldn't be able to read the book anymore, but Harold said he loved it so much he wanted to send the whole world the words. Harold and Bernadette had a girl, Marianne, probably a few years sooner than they should have. Her eyes were so bright, Harold would sometimes turn off all the lights in her room to make sure they didn't glow. "My Marianne," he would tell people, "she's a miracle." He kept her away from heights and away from heartache, and sang her to sleep until she grew too old.
From his book, Indigenous Beasts, that's a story called Home Movies, author Nathan Sellin. The book is available now from Raincoast Books. Ask for it at your local bookshop or order it online from chaptersindigo.ca or at amazon.ca. Easiest thing might be just to head over to the Raincoast Books website. There you'll find it listed along with other new releases from Raincoast, and they're at www.raincoast.com. For Raincoast Books, I'm Robert Wemet. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back soon with more from Raincoast Books.